Discussions with Ajahn Suchin in Nakhonnayo, Thailand, May 2015. Recorded and edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Roxanne, Helena, Sarah, Suchin, John, Betty, and Jagrit.
As it turns out, this is Roxanne's only discussion because she has to leave in the morning, so it's her only chance for asking questions. So anything you would like to start asking about?
I'm just happy to hear anything. I was just reading about realities and concepts because I find that very difficult to distinguish between what is...
Okay. When we think about the terms, and sorry, it's difficult. But what about what is now appearing? Is it difficult?
In what way?
What is now? What is there now? Here, at this moment. Is it difficult?
No.
So what is that?
Reality?
We talk about reality, but what is meant by reality? It's real. Seeing now sees. And whisper object on that which is seen is real too. So we just talk about whatever is real in every moment because we don't understand the true nature of what appear at all in a day. But there are so many, many realities from moment of waking up until one go to sleep. See? Know nothing about what is there. We just think that there is seeing, but actually, seeing cannot last at all. When it's conditioned to see, it arises just to see. No one can have it arise at will.
No control.
And no one can stop it going away at all. And why didn't we think about this at all before? That is so important. Because in one's life, there's only seeing, hearing, whatever happens all day, and that which is not known at all until death, see? So what's the use of just to be born and then experience and then nothing left at all? For example, yesterday's gone completely, no matter, so very pleasant feeling, everything. It's in the past, and we haven't thought about it at all. If we don't talk about it, we forgot everything yesterday, and now we just think about who's here and who's there, and then it passes on and on each day. So I think that we shouldn't be born just not knowing anything, not understand anything, just cling to whatever appears in one's life, because there's the idea that it's permanent as I and he or she of thing, but actually it's only a reality which cannot be changed. For example, visible object that is seen cannot be anyone at all. But the idea after saw it, take it as something very permanent, like I am here and table and chair and everything. But when one falls asleep tonight,
it's gone.
No idea left at all about anything, nothing. Who am I? Where am I? Friends? Parents? No one at all. And that is the truth, that each morning is like that, but it does not appear as that because at the moment just follow closely, closely all day long. Hides away the truth that that which is experienced now falls away all the time. So what is left? Just be born, to be called this by names. But after that, what is there? And is it true? Or not true? At moment of being asleep, no world, no one, no I. But there is, must be, that which arises and experiences as living being. because this is not living being, because it cannot experience anything. So whenever, wherever there is the reality which experiences, that is living being. Each moment. The dead cannot see. So seeing moment is just living being or reality which cannot be anyone at all, because it has conditions for its arising, falling away, not arise again.
So what are these things that can experience?
Like what?
So that is my question.
This
what
thing,
can
this thing, what this thing? You talk about this thing.
I don't know, so
yeah, see, we know nothing at all. Even there is moment of seeing, hearing, know nothing about the truth.
In the van we were talking
about seeing, for example. Does seeing experience?
No.
No?
No.
What sees that which is visible?
What do you mean by no? Is there seeing now?
Yes.
Okay, so when there is seeing now,
what does seeing see?
Whatever can be seen,
exactly. Yes. We can call it visible object, but mm-hmm. that which is seen. So the seeing sees that
okay.
visible object.
Okay.
So the seeing experiences visible object. And in a moment of hearing hears what?
Whatever can be heard.
Sound.
Sound yeah.
can be heard. So hearing hears sound. So seeing is a kind of experiencing. Hearing is another kind of experiencing. Different from the visible object, which doesn't experience anything, or the sound, that which is heard, which doesn't experience anything.
So what is seeing and what is hearing? What? So they can experience, but what is... not it, but seeing and hearing.
If we don't think about it,
mm-hmm.
what about moment of hearing? Is there no moment of hearing?
Of experiencing. So what experiences is it's a reality that can experience something. So seeing and hearing have that in common.
Okay, so they're realities.
They're both realities that experience an object.
If there were no seeing, nothing would be seen.
Right.
If there were
right.
no hearing,
yeah, nothing.
Nothing would be heard. Sounds might arise and fall away, but they wouldn't be heard
mm-hmm.
if there's no hearing. If there were no smelling, no odor would be smelt.
Mm-hmm.
So we think that it's I who see, or I who hear, or I who smell, but actually it's a moment of experiencing, a moment of consciousness, seeing that sees, a moment of consciousness, hearing, which hears just for an instant and then falls away. And afterwards there's thinking about what's been seen, thinking about what's been heard. But at that moment of seeing, it's just the experiencing of that which is seen. At a moment of hearing, just the experiencing of that which is heard. That which is seen is a reality, but that which is seen, whatever is seen, the visible object is a reality.
Okay.
But table, an idea of table, an idea of microphone is just an idea, different from that which is seen.
Okay.
So just that which is seen is the object of seeing consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Afterwards there are ideas of tables and microphones, but that's thinking about what is seen, thinking about what's heard.
In conventional speech, when we talk about seeing, we talk about like composite experience.
In talking about realities. We distinguish between the consciousness that experiences and the object that is seen. So they are different kinds of realities, totally different kinds of realities. It's not just one composite thing.
I understand. It's just they're very different, but they all have the name realities.
Yes.
Difficult to grasp in order to...
And they're called realities because they can be directly experienced. And they can't be analysed further into any component parts. So seeing consciousness is a basic element. And visible objects is another basic element. They can't be split into further parts.
Okay. Thank you.
So reality now, like seeing now, it has its characteristic that can be known. But microphone is a concept because it can only be thought about.
Okay, so almost anything that we give names to...
As soon as there's giving a name, it's a concept, an idea. It's not the reality that can be directly known now, like hearing or sound. Hardness is real, but table is an idea, a concept. Because when touching, hardness is directly experienced, but table is only thought about.
Okay, all right. Thank
and,
you.
And the point of it all is in order to understand that really there are just different realities arising and falling away in truth. There is no person, no being, no thing like table. So actually there is just the world through the eye sense, ear sense, and so on, just six worlds, five sense worlds, and thinking.
So now at a moment when...
that which is seen appears, that's the entire world, because anything experienced a moment ago is gone, anything to come hasn't come yet. So the whole world is just that moment of experiencing that which is seen for an instant.
Does it make any sense, Helena? Can you give it up?
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to digest off, you know, what you've been talking about. I think that makes sense.
So, just want to experience from day to day, from time to time, and then no more. True enough.
So then what is the point?
The point is that that is seeing who make it arise, who can make it experience the pleasant object that you would like to experience. It's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
It means that there is no permanent or lasting person or personality at all. If there is no seeing, can there be anyone who sees? If there is no hearing, no thinking, no experiencing at all, can there be anyone in this world? So they are just that uncontrollable reality which has to arise because of its proper conditions. For example, seeing, if there is no the eye-based, that special quality of reality which the light or the whispered object now appear impinge on it, there can never be seeing which experience that which now appears. So without seeing, no world of that which appears now as different people and thing at all. So who can make that reality to arise? See, even the moment, the first moment of birth of this life, what condition is arising? And since it has arisen from condition, when there is no more conditions, no more experiencing, nobody knows it now. That which experiences is conditioned to arise and fall away so very rapidly. It almost be said that as soon as it has arisen, it falls away.
So then, if those what arises is condition, then...
For example, there is seeing. Then, who condition hearing after seeing? Then, who condition thinking after seeing and hearing? This is the way life or reality is from moment to moment by conditions.
So what makes that different from, I guess, what the conventional destiny type thing, you know, you have no control, right? So if there is no self, we are not, of course, we're not controlling seeing, hearing, or thinking. Everything that arises is conditioned, so I just...
Well, certain conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, it's not a case of control and it's not a case of random destiny. There are conditions. For example, seeing and hearing are both result of past deeds. So there's a relationship between past deeds and present experiencing of objects through the sense doors. But to get back to your question, what's the point of it? You've put your finger on one of the nubs of the matter. There isn't any real point to it. It's just seeing and hearing different moments of experiencing arising and falling away. And yet we attach so much importance to these experiences. But they're just momentary, fleeting and conditioned, not under control. We're all brought up to think there is a purpose and point to everything in life. But what we begin to learn when we look at realities is that there's nothing there that's worth grasping onto or wishing for or clinging to because it's so ephemeral.
Also, that's the point. The point of understanding realities is to understand that the nature of life is not beings and persons. It is not that there are no beings. There are just elements, realities, arising and falling away. And that because we think there's a being there, we have a lot of attachment to it, to that being. I want that. I don't want that. I like that. I want to learn this, etc., etc. Okay? So the more we can understand the nature of the whatever the realities are that are arising at a given moment, okay, any moment, but more importantly later on when there's a specific moment when it is understood, which is called Satipatthana, then there's the understanding of and the lessening of the idea that there is a self in here, okay. So that's what the purpose is. This is what the Buddha taught as the path, so to speak, to enlightenment. The more there is the letting go of attachment, disattachment. The more there's a letting go of the disattachment from all these things which we mistake, these concept things that have shape and form, the more there's understanding in order to have that disattachment. And the more disattachment there is, the more there is opportunity for more understanding to arise later on. So it's an ongoing, like a path. It's an ongoing thing. So that's what the purpose is, basically. It's a very difficult purpose because it takes lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes. And sometimes we get stuck in, detours. Right now you're asking about the difference between a concept and a reality. So the concepts are not real. We think they're real. Like, oh yeah, I love my phone. Yeah, I want that phone. We think this thing is real, but it's made up of realities. Okay? There's a bunch of realities that make up this phone that is really just a concept because it's a conglomeration of realities. Okay? So the more we think in terms of the realities of this thing rather than phone, the more we can disattach from this, so that if maybe there's a point of understanding will be reached where this thing gets lost, it won't be upset about it. Okay, it gets broken, it gets lost, whatever. I won't be so upset about it. So that's also part of the purpose of our study. Anyway.
How many moments passed without understanding? See? So we just not only live in the world with attachment and ignorance all the time, because there can be the understanding of whatever is now at this moment. It depends on whether you see the benefit of understanding it or not, because otherwise one lives without understanding anything at all in one's life, that it's not just that which is seen, but there must be more than that which is seen. Because usually there's seeing and that which is seen as something all the time. Is that true? Or what is beyond that? At moment, just moment of seeing, not moment of thinking, which follows instantly. Seeing itself should be precisely known. Otherwise there must be ignorance and blindness all the time about what goes on in one's life or every moment. For example, there is seeing. Who knows about that? So what is it? It depends on whether anyone is interested to understand it or just let it go away all the time in a day without any understanding. Usually there is wrong understanding of what ever appears. For example, there's seeing, but who knows that it's just a reality, no one at all, and no one can condition its arising, but it has its own conditions for its arising. Without the eye there's, without that which can impinge on it, and without other conditions, there will never be seeing right now. And thinking about what seeing sees, it sees only that which can be seen. It cannot see hardness. It cannot see sound. It cannot see smell. It can see just right to see that which can be seen. If we have more understanding about each word like that which can be seen, there can be the beginning of understanding that depth or the subtlety of that which pass on all the time without understanding. Because what is seen is seen, but there's no one in that which can be seen at all. But there is always idea, I see this, I see that. What is this and that? Thinking about shape and form instantly, unknowingly taking it for something permanent. And who sees? I see. But seeing cannot be I, because it's only an element, a reality, which has conditions to arise and see. That's all. Not more than that.
John, you just said that one can see the subtlety of that which sees or that which experiences. What do you mean by that?
Because at this moment, there is seeing, everyone knows, but takes it for I see. See? Beginning to have wrong understanding of that which sees and that which is seen. And or other moments too, no understanding, like hearing what, thinking what, or what is thinking, what is hearing. So the subtlety of seeing is that an element, no shape, no form, no smell, no taste, it arises by conditions to experience only that which now seen, that's all.
Is seen also be subtle?
Certainly. Certainly. Otherwise, that is table, see? Chair, people, is that which is seen? Even that reality which can be seen is very difficult because as soon as it appears, it appears with the appearance of something. All the time, because of the rapidity of the arising and falling away of both that which is seen and the seeing. There are many, many moments of the experiencing which is not seeing, in between seeing, like thinking. Who knows that? As long as it's not known, there is the idea all the time, I see. And that which is seen is something all the time. If it's not as subtle as this, there will never be the idea of something in that which is seen.
And even when we know that there is no smartphone, that only visible objects seen, if one says that this is made up of realities, it's still the idea of something. Because actually, there is no smartphone to be made up of anything at all. There are only elements in the first place. So there's no book made up of anything or glass made up of anything.
Right.
Just that which is seen, just that which is heard.
Just the reality.
Only visible object. And when you mentioned before in the house that you find it confusing, the different senses, so there's just the seeing and that which is seen, hearing that which is heard, smelling, smelt, tasting, tasted, touched, and what is touched?
Hardness, softness.
Anything else touched?
Heat,
cold. And motion.
Motion?
Pressure,
okay.
Mm. That's all that is touched. And usually, like you say, it seems that there are different sense experiences at the same time, so they get mixed up. But actually, at a moment of seeing, nothing is heard, nothing is touched. At a moment or when hardness is experienced, nothing else experienced at that moment. That is the world.
So then, how about thinking?
And then thinking, so after seeing, after hearing, after smelling, tasting, touching, thinking about the shape, the impression of that which is seen, and then later thinking about ideas about what has been seen. But without that which is seen being experienced, there couldn't be any idea of the impression, there couldn't be any thinking about glass or smartphone.
What are the ideas? Where do they come from?
Memory. Without memory, there couldn't be any thinking. So at each moment, there is memory. This is a mental factor that arises with each moment of consciousness, and it marks and remembers what is experienced. So this is why there can be remembering, this is a glass, this is a table, because there has been the remembering of the visible objects, remembering of the sound, remembering of the concepts and ideas. So there's remembering at each moment, nothing lost. And that remembering accumulates.
Yep.
There's remembering of the words that are spoken now because there has been the thinking about those words in the past.
Again, not
I or anyone who remembers or thinks, just different realities which experience the object
in this case, the idea of thinking that is thought about.
The idea of pakatu kandisya pachaya, can it apply to, can we say that sense process, sense door process is followed by mind door, that the sense door process is a pakatu kandisya pachaya for mind door?
Can you translate?
Can we say, yeah, if we don't talk about the name, Pakatupanisiyapatriya, what about each experience?
Is
accumulated.
Is accumulated. Yeah. Pakatupanisiyapatriya is natural, decisive support
desire.
Condition. Yeah. It's like, if, to give an example, that you can relate to is, for example, if you like the color red, each time you see something red, it brings up...
That's like your favorite color.
Yeah, something like that. So
like this?
Yeah.
Which one do you like? Green, or yellow, or white?
So, and sometimes this condition applies to, also means that certain realities follow other realities by this particular tendency. So I was wondering about, because you were asking about why thinking happens, and Sarah answered that it's by memory. Yeah, I know that you were asking about thinking in terms of recognizable things, but I was also thinking about thinking that arises automatically after each sense door process. It's a natural thing. It must arise even before you start to recognize. It has to happen. So that's why my question, I was asking... I was wondering whether we can talk about thinking being the result of is pakatupanisepachai of.
See, yeah, we can just say it's the habit or the
tendency to think in this way or that way, like some people think with a lot of attachment about these colors, and some people may think with aversion or like this or like that because of the habit or the tendency that has been accumulated.
Habit as in, like, so the memory.
Habit,
like
habitual,
like
habitual tendency.
See, like, there's a habit, one has a habit of liking yellow more than green, or a habit of enjoying drinking water rather than coffee. So it's that habitual tendency that accumulates. So each time there's liking for this particular taste, that habit grows a little bit. Understanding now, listening and considering and understanding, is so that that understanding can grow and develop. So the habit of understanding becomes stronger and becomes accumulated. And when it's accumulated, it develops more deeply. So otherwise there would be no point in listening if everything just got lost and forgotten. But because just like attachment to a certain color can grow and develop, so can understanding from listening and considering. It can grow and develop so that when one considers more about the truth of life, that understanding develops to come closer and closer to understanding the realities of life at this moment. But if there had not been any hearing or considering, it would be impossible for that understanding, the habit of understanding, to develop. So we can say, as Ajahn said before, that seeing now or hearing is a result of past deeds, past karma. Everyone's familiar with karma, the idea of karma, but seeing now is specifically the result of karma. But the thinking about what is seen with attachment or with understanding, that is not the result of karma. That is because of the tendency, because of the condition Sukhin mentioned, the habitual tendency which accumulates and develops.
About in Thai, you differentiate or you use both thale pap, thale chu. So in English, how would you?
Oka.
Oka. Thale means oka, and pap and chu. So what is pap? What is chu?
We have to come to understand the realities, which are they, what are they? The same as asava. That which is asava is oka, because it's like wider and wider, very more difficult to go across it. So now at this moment, the first one is kamasava. Why it is kama? So what kama means? Sensuous object, that which is seen, heard, smelled, tasted, and touched. This is daily life. Who can avoid seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and touching? But ignorance is there. So whenever whatever arises, it is object of attachment. If there is nothing arising at all, can there be a world? Impossible. But whatever arises, it's there as a world. And there is attachment to that, because at this moment, who does not want to see anything at all in one's life? So whenever there is seeing any sensuous object, there is attachment. This is asava and this is oka. And now there is attachment to visible object. So many different objects here, and that is oka whenever there is attachment, and asava too, and ignorance too, which are oka, kam oka, and titti, wrong understanding, and pawa, attachment to be living being.
La vija.
So as Kunnapadon was trying to explain to me, the difference between one and the other is that first there is what's seen, and then there's thinking about what's seen, labeling.
For everyone, just talk about one moment, that there is attachment.
Attachment first to color?
To anything.
As soon as it's seen, before there's thinking at all. Just immediately in the sense door process.
There's clinging, there's asava, kamasava. As soon as the visible object's been seen, the first akusala chittas that follow instantly. No thinking about it.
Mm. Can we say that without understanding there must be in blindness or the dark world?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the same with the other
asavas, like avijja, ignorance instantly.
In other words, in the ocean of ignorance. Now, Khun Sukhin, now Roxanne, now Helena.
So this is Thale Chu.
Right.
Before that, it's Thale Pap.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it?
Mm-hmm. We are in the ocean. We cannot get to the back other side of ignorance. The other side is understanding and Nibbana, the Four Noble Truths.
In just mentioning about world, in Vietnam you mentioned three kinds of world, the Okasa, the open space, and Sata, the world of beings, and Sankara, Loka. Loka is world, three kinds of world. And actually there are only Sankara Loka, but the Sankara Dhammas are taken for Okasa and Sata. Is that what is meant?
If there's nothing, there's no Sankara.
Right. So Okasa just means nothing or open space? Or?
When you talk about the world in general, we talk about the universe in general.
Mm.
Is that the universe or there's no universe at all? There is universe, right? Stars,
right.
Moon, and so on. We cannot say that there's none at all.
Nothing.
And there's not just the space or the world, which is the world of living being. The living being itself is a world.
Satellite.
Without the reality which can experience, there is no satta or living being at all. This is a second world, not only just the universe. And the third one is, no matter what, is the world of conditions. To condition whatever arises. Because nothing can arise without conditions. Even that world, the first one, the universe, is Sankara Loka. Without conditions, there cannot be such world. And the second one, the living being, without the conditions for its arising, it cannot arise as living being. So all depends on Sankara.
So to summarize, the first one is Rupa that exists, and second was Nama, which knows Rupa. And the third one is that this Rupa and Nama is just the momentary realities.
Or
without this momentary realities, there's no that world.
No matter what kind of world.
Well, the first one is just not any rupas, but particularly referring to out there. Or
there must be rupa, whatever arises must be rupa or nama, that which can experience or that which cannot experience.
Why mention for the second one, why refer to it as Sata Loka?
Because there is not only the universe.
Oh, just to make the point that there are those dhammas taken for being.
Mm-hmm. And that there is not.
So without the second, there's no idea about the first? Without
even it's there, by nature.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the first is only referring to rupas out there, conditioned by temperature, not anything to do with beings.
Probably, yeah.
And the second one is referring to...
Oh, for all rupas. For all rupas.
For the universe.
Yeah.
What do we think about that?
Not about beings.
Even populated by beings, different beings, the universe. Right.
But when we talk about just the place or the akasa...
Then it's just a...
Without living being.
Without living being, yeah. Okay. And that's the idea. Without then there is living being which knows.
Mm-hmm. Okasa, not akasa. Akasa is just
So, Achan, when you say other stars and the universe as we know it is there is
by conditions.
So because we're having a discussion with one of the members on DSG who to me it feels like he's saying it would be wrong to assume that there is anything outside the present moment. But from what I hear, you're saying it would be wrong to not assume, to assume that there's nothing. Right? So it's correct?
Is there the sun?
Only when there's thinking.
No reality of sun, moon, stars at all. Or?
If the conditions for the arising of certain rupas pertain, then the rupa will arise, regardless of whether there's any experiencing of it or not, surely. Because we say everything is conditioned, but that means the conditions apply whether or not there's any knowledge or awareness.
What about, like
now, what about the rupas in the back of one's body, or the rupas rising and falling away in the garden behind? All different rupas conditioned, regardless of whether they're experienced or
the rupas that just fallen away and the rupas that have not come. The thing is that the position that I'm understanding is that that would be just thinking. Whether the sun or the back of the head or whatever is just thinking.
It is thinking now.
But regardless of whether there's thinking or not, there are rupas conditioned by temperature arising and falling away that make up what we call the world or the universe. But the point is, the Buddha's teaching is about the understanding of what can be directly known. So it's actually irrelevant, but it doesn't mean that they aren't there.
No, I think that's the correct.
The all is what
that's
can
the
be
correct.
Known.
It means my own conclusion is if only one reality can be known, doesn't mean that there is only that one reality at that time, right? Because there's a sun there, regardless of whether or not I'm thinking, the rupas rising and falling away.
So only the visible object appears that can be directly
that
known.
That can only ever be known is the reality that appears. But one shouldn't come to a conclusion that that's the only reality there is.
And we had a discussion in the van. I'd like to bring Hella into the discussion more about being a good person. And you mentioned that you consider this as part of the aim of the Buddha's teachings, to be a good person, or common sense about ways of behavior. Would you like to say more?
Yes, because I felt actually, the Buddhism teaching is to teach, you know, basically I think probably is to give an opportunity to teach people that, you know, to become a good person. And because everyone, they have actually wholesome mind and unwholesome mind. So, you know, I think the more we hear this, we understand more, and, you know, we will become a better person. This is how, you know, yeah.
That's the idea of I and person. And the teachings of Buddha, that's not just to tell people or taught them to be good. That's not enough. Just to be good. But more than that, who knows what is good in reality, not I. What is there? See? So we just think that to be good is enough, but no understanding of what is that we call good or goodness at all. So there is wrong understanding, no understanding, like to be blind all the time, taking this and that, sometimes pleasant, sometimes unpleasant, sometimes wholesome, sometimes unwholesome, without any understanding. That's why we cannot understand whatever appears without the teachings of the Buddha, who tell about seeing as it is, just that which is conditioned to arise. Without its proper conditions, it cannot arise at all. So as soon as it has arisen, it falls away instantly. So where is I if the seeing is I? So each moment cannot be taken as I, but without right understanding, ignorance is there and attachment is there. Whenever there is seeing, there is attachment to that which is seen. Before we see that particular thing, no attachment to that particular thing at all, because it hasn't been seen yet. But as soon as it's there, it conditions attachment to that, even there is no understanding what it is. For example, seeing that which is seen, but not as thing or person, but there is attachment to only that which is seen already, unknowingly. So is that good? Good person? Not enough. So his teachings is beyond the others' teaching to understand the truth, the absolute truth of what arises, what is born, and what dies.
But Acham, on the other hand, we also know that the best of men beside the Buddha are the arahats, and then anagamis, sakadagamis, sotapans. So in a way, can't we say that the point is to become a good person, but all at the same time we know that the only way to become good is through development of understanding?
Mm-hmm. As long as there's right understanding. Whenever there's right understanding, it brings all wholesome realities.
And the point to stress from the beginning is that it's not my goodness or Ajahn's goodness or anyone else's goodness, that they're just conditioned dharmas. So it's not this person who is
goodness,
good at all. It doesn't belong to anyone. It's just an impermanent dharma that arises and falls away. So it's not Ajahn who has so much metta and is such a good person, or Sukhin who is this or this or that. It's just conditioned dharmas that arise and fall away, not anyone there at all. Otherwise one just continues to live in the world of people and things, thinking this person is this and that person is that, but it's not like that at all.
So in a way, when one might ask oneself, when one thinks good, to be a good person, first maybe we have to know what is good. And we come to understand that good is in fact just a conditioned phenomena.
But it still seems to me that if we're thinking in terms of becoming a better person, no matter what our definition, there's still very much the idea of me wanting to become something.
This kind of person, clinging to me, having more metta or more kindness.
It's
deeply rooted by clinging.
That's what most people would think. It's only after there's some understanding then we know that it's not about...
So that's why understanding has develop with detachment from what appears, no matter its goodness or badness or seeing or hearing or whatever appears.
So
otherwise it's just
becoming
clinging
a good
to goodness.
Person. Just understand whatever appears.
heard about dana, sila, bhavana, so goodness as classified by different moments of consciousness and different mental states. So at moments of giving, it's wholesome. At moments of sila, at moments of understanding. And when we were in Vietnam, we were discussing with regard to sila how actually at any moment of wholesomeness, any moment of kusala citta, like now, it is kusala sila. So actually sila refers to the behavior of consciousness, and it can be good or bad. At a moment of anger, it's akusala sila, unwholesome sila. And I have a question on this, because usually when we talk about dana, sila, bhavana, of course these are just words, but actually sila is at any moment of wholesomeness. So no matter whether we're talking about dana, sila, or bhavana, actually at each moment of wholesomeness, it is wholesome sila. So what is the purpose of classifying in that way between dana, sila, and bhavana? Can we just say any moment of wholesomeness is sila, but in addition there can be moments of giving, and in addition moments of understanding?
It's under what subject we are talking about.
I see.
When we're talking about the development of understanding, we just talk about the kusala sila. No need to talk about akusala sila. But in order to understand realities as they are, we should understand the reality, not the word. For example, sila, what is it? Not just follow 5 sila, 8 sila, 10 silas, but what is sila in reality? Otherwise, one thinks that one is now observing sila, but it is attachment to sila, because there is no understanding of sila at all. And someone might be so frightened or afraid to break sila because of the clinging to the idea of I, not understanding what is there at that moment. So even the purpose of observing sila is wrong when there's no understanding.
So all those, I mean, including us, is that all of us who speak so much about sila, and the value of sila, we do it without understanding what sila is.
Mm-hmm.
If there's no understanding of
the consciousness now, whether it is kusala or akusala, wholesome or unwholesome now, then no idea of whether it's wholesome or unwholesome sila, because sila is just the nature, the behavior of the moment of consciousness at this moment. Nothing to do with following rules or taking particular actions. It has to come back to the kind of citta, the kind of consciousness at this moment.
So each word of the Buddha's teaching is all about understanding. Not just talking about dana without understanding what dana is, and sila, what is it? Because there are so many levels of sila.
And also we can see the term that it's only through understanding that any kind of kusala can be developed.
So now can I say, the more understanding of the Buddha teaching, that will help us, you know, to cultivate more wholesome mind and, to cultivate more wholesome mind and kindness to people. Can I say that? Yeah? Mm-hmm.
And best of all is to understand that exactly there is no one,
right.
Only realities are there. So there's no clinging to that reality as I, because when there's clinging to I, there is selfishness. What is the dearest in the world?
What is the dearest thing?
In the world.
Yeah.
Dearest.
Who, what? Seeing now, hearing now, thinking now. Object of attachment as I. So whom you do you cling to most? Not the others.
Oneself. Mm-hmm. Oneself is dearest of all.
And that will bring sorrow. Because actually so there's no self.
At the same time, we're the dearest and yet the worst enemy, our own worst enemy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even when it's the
loss of someone one holds dear, family member or a close friend who is hurt or injured, and one feels so sad, one thinks one's so sad for them, but actually it's one's own feeling that one is grieving over, one's own loss of pleasant feeling. So even at that time when there's feeling sad, it's still clinging to oneself and one's own pleasant feeling. Of course, we lost what is dear to us. It's because of the attachment to oneself and attachment to those one holds dear, my family, my friends.
So then why do we need, if understanding is the most important, trying to eradicate ignorance, why do we need to try and live life? Why can't we? Because then we'll have family, which is, you know, attachment to many other, yeah, continuously. Why don't we just...
This life, next life, so on.
Mm-hmm.
Even if this life is ended, start again in next life, new family, new friends, new attachments, new sorrow, more hurt, more unhappiness, on and on and on. So this is the nature of, this is the nature of dukkha. Unsatisfactoriness, that there is clinging all the time to that which is impermanent and unsatisfactory on because of the deep-rooted ignorance and attachment. So only through understanding the truth about life can ignorance and attachment eventually be eradicated. So this is the purpose of the path, through understanding the complete eradication, starting with the strongest, the grossest kind of attachment, which is the attachment with wrong view, the clinging to the idea of self and people and things. So this kind of attachment with wrong understanding has to be eradicated first before more subtle kinds of attachment can be eradicated. So this is the point of the path through the development of understanding. Otherwise, the cycle just goes on and on. Happiness, unhappiness, worldly conditions, gain, loss, clinging to impermanent, that which is impermanent, clinging to self, clinging to family and friends, misery, unhappiness, round and round.
So some people think that it might be easier to understand by just leaving this world, you know, like going into a jungle or something and just trying to understand.
What about you?
No, I don't think that actually.
What about in the jungle? Is there
any seeing? Is there hearing? Is there tasting?
Yeah,
touching?
Yeah,
thinking about visible objects, thinking about sound.
Well, I don't feel like there's as much attachment. Maybe the seeing will be seeing animals or trees or that type of...
It might be attachment to results, though, going there in the first place.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think it's bitter or anything, but because I feel if I want to understand more, for there to be more understanding, I think we need to be here, and which I said I need to be here.
Are you saying that the conditions for having a better understanding are like learning more about what realities are and what it means for there to be awareness and understanding of them?
I think
because if we haven't heard about realities in the first place, there wouldn't be any idea of having more understanding. Only a Buddha teaches this.
Yeah.
So until we come across this teaching, there can't be any concept of developing that understanding. And likewise, once we've heard it, it's not enough just to have heard it briefly and then, oh yeah, we're, from now on I can manage on my own.
Mm.
We have to hear it again and again and have it explained in further detail.
So that's what I kind of mean. So like someone, so we hear it, reread it, and then take that into the jungle and then try to understand it in the jungle. Not, yeah.
But
I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's, I can try to understand these realities more by actually having them here, trying to feel.
Then you don't understand reality, because now that is reality and you think that you better go away.
Well, I know.
To have some surroundings like in the forest. But do you know what right understanding is?
Right understanding.
It understands whatever is there by conditions, not by your own thought at all. That's why your own way is different from the Buddha's way completely. Because you think with the idea of self, I can try, I can do. But actually, what is what you talk about? To try, to do, what is that moment in reality? No understanding. So people do not understand what understanding understand. So they have the idea that understanding understands something which is not now. But actually, this moment is conditioned. If there is no understanding of the conditioned reality, there must be the idea of I. But seeing is conditioned. Hearing is conditioned. Such thinking is conditioned. So one follows one's own way of thought without understanding the subtlety of reality right now, that without understanding from listening, intellectual understanding, which is the only thing that will be conditioned for the direct awareness right now.
Mm-hmm.
No matter where you are, if you don't have conditions, the fully developed at level of satyayana, not moving away, because there are conditions for right awareness to arise just now by conditions.
Mm-hmm.
By this way, it can bring more firm understanding of anatta, uncontrollable, not self. But if it's your own way, you think that you can, and then something happened, you think that, oh, it's there. But it's not anatta, because it's you who tries to have surroundings or conditions for the arising of such. But that is not right understanding at all.
But in turn, some people believe that is the Buddha's way.
Some. Not Sariputta, not his disciples, not Buddha's disciples.
So how would you put it? I can understand that when you say it is one's own way, sure. When one thinks about doing something or going somewhere, it's actually one's own idea, one's own way.
One's own ignorance.
Or even thinking that one can just think it out on one's own in a quiet place, it's an idea of practice, or one's own practice.
It's not the Dhamma way. So how would you describe the Buddha's way? How would you put it?
Understanding from hearing, considering.
And just what Ajahn was talking about.
And she mentioned satchanyana. So this is from hearing, considering, like now, the understanding that there are only dharmas which are conditioned, no one can do anything. That understanding becomes firmer and firmer until it's really firmer. Satya means truth, and jnana means understanding, until it's firm understanding of the truth that dharmas are just conditioned, no matter here or there or anywhere. So when it's that firm understanding of the truth from this kind of considering, no thought about going another place or trying this or having a little more quiet time or not working so much or being in a special place to understand Dhamma, because at those times there's no understanding that seeing is conditioned, hearing is conditioned, no matter where or when. So the way to for understanding is to develop is really by hearing and considering more about what is real at this moment.
If you ask the person who goes to the meditation center somewhere, whether that person understands whatever appears now, they have no idea at all, no matter who. About seeing and visible object, no idea, no understanding.
So why do they go to these meditation things?
They hope, they think that they can do, because they are told to do, to sit, to walk. No understanding.
Or they think that they are imitating the Buddha's lifestyle or the lifestyle of the monks. But as Jan said, no understanding, just kind of trying to copy the outer appearance, but not understanding the realities of daily life that the Buddha taught. So even if it's a teacher who has a lot of Abhidharma study or can recite in Pali, if it's not understanding of this moment, bound to be an idea of following a practice or a technique or going to on a retreat or a special place, instead of just understanding realities in daily life very naturally, like now.
So that understanding or trying to understand, is that what is meant by practice?
The Pali word actually, patipati, means touching the object, so touching the object of understanding. It doesn't mean I or self or anyone going and doing anything at all. Like now, this visible object, at a moment of understanding, it is the intellectual understanding at the moment of visible object, that which is seen. And when the intellectual understanding, like now, develops and grows, it conditions the direct understanding, the patipati, or you can call it practice, the direct understanding of reality, but not anyone who ever does anything for it to arise.
Misunderstanding. Yeah, because I was just reading the realities and concept, and it said, just intellectual understanding or, reading about all these concepts is not enough. You must practice, but not as in sit in a meditate type of practice, but that's what I'm trying to understand.
Anything at all.
No,
forget about you and forget about practice, because it's actually about hearing what is real now, distinguishing it from that which is not real. So understanding from hearing that only touch, hardness is touched, only visible object is seen, is a condition for understanding to develop. But not I who focus on hardness or try to understand anything, because then it's wrong understanding, wrong path. So this is why it's very subtle, as we were saying, because it's just about understanding, not
doing anything at all, not even trying to understand for an instant.
And it depends on your development of understanding of the teachings, for example, realities. Are you sure? Have confidence? See, just one word, from one word to another word, it doesn't mean that without any firm confidence and one will do, which is against the understanding of anatthaness. Reality cannot belong to anyone at all. Seeing just arises and falls away and never to rise again. So who's there? Who owns it? Nothing, because just a moment of experiencing arising and falling away. So there must be satyayana, the firm confidence on each word of the Buddha's word. Reality cannot be anything but that particular reality which is conditioned to be, to arise and be such. Like hardness, no matter in the Buddha's time, before that or after that, hardness is conditioned to be hard. It doesn't belong to anyone. Can hardness here belong to me? See, only hardness. Without citta, who likes it, who wants it, who owns it? Even it is given for free, no one takes it at all. It is now at this moment, but when citta is there, it seems or appears like living rupa, different from the rupa without citta arising. And one day, that truth will become true for everyone.
When you say the truth will become true, so...
At moment of death.
Because I'm actually just trying to understand when you say the truth will become true. Can you explain a little bit more?
The truth is the truth, but it's not true to the person who does not understand it as truth. For example, that which is now seen is no one, nothing in it. Is it true for you? Or begins to think about it.
We can have an intellectual appreciation of the idea that what is seen is just a visible object, but there's no actual direct experience of visible object as visible object. So I think what Ajahn means is that the truth can be appreciated, but it's not known directly.
You made a comment before that
intellectual understanding is only the story of Dharma, like you haven't met someone even though they're so close. So it's understanding correctly in theory. When we say it's only intellectual understanding, well, I think it's just to show that it's so little. Actually, it's precious. Much better to intellectually understand what is right than not to have heard. So actually, it's very precious, but only in the sense that it's not yet the direct understanding of the truth. But what is true, no matter whether it's known or not. But if it's not known, then the truth isn't any closer, I think.
Only when there is the understanding of the visible object of that only reality that can be seen will eliminate the attachment to it little by little. So very little. It takes time, long, long time. Because it's not anyone who can experience it, only the developed panya, from moment to moment begin to understand it. Because now at this moment of talking about it, it brings about the idea of it's true. But so soon after that, no thinking about it anymore. That's why it needs more hearing, like warning about the truth which is now appear, but no one knows the truth of it. That's the way to understand what is the Buddha's word and what is not the Buddha's word. Because no one can tell about this at all, because it's from his enlightenment, the truth.
One doesn't need a Buddha to tell people to be a good person or to go on retreat and focus on breath or do this or that, but to understand reality now, such as seeing as not anyone. It takes a Buddha to teach us this, to really help us understand that there are only different mental and physical realities, no self, no being at all, no thing. It's the truth that we could never find for ourselves if it hasn't been heard.
Just the understanding that we would not know all this if we hadn't heard the Dhamma is a level of understanding.
One begins to see Buddha, to know Buddha. Getting closer, closer to see him. So far, far away.
Less far.
From moment to moment. Yeah. But from his words, one can know him. Can what we are talking about be directly experienced? When time comes, when enough conditions, but without right conditions, impossible. So if anyone would like to hasten Panya, to have time for it, try very hard, useless. And wrong understanding too.
The path, one knows that it can happen, but it takes time by conditions, mm-hmm. not by wanting to, not by will, not by doing this, not by doing that.
Can you move away the universe? See, can you move away ignorance and attachment? It's more difficult than that, because all are mental fact realities. And it's there quite long, long time, deeply and deeply, deeper and deeper, inside. It cannot be taken away by anything except right understanding. For quite a long, long time before right understanding can take just a little bit of ignorance away. And this is the words of Virya, to see that no one can do anything, only Virya.
Virya is effort or
energy, which is not self. a reality, mental reality, arising with almost every citta.
Like usually people think they need to make an effort or an energy or have energy to do something. Like they think, okay, to practice or develop understanding, there has to be an effort and they need to open the books or go somewhere or do something. But actually, effort, virya, is a mental factor arising, as Ajahn said, with almost every citta. So if it's a wholesome citta, wholesome moment of consciousness, then the effort is wholesome. But if it's an unwholesome citta, like when there's the idea of I can do something, then the virya, however great, is unwholesome.
I don't know if you're familiar.
But so we've been talking about how there's one moment of consciousness at a time, like seeing is a moment of consciousness. We can call it citta. Hearing is a moment of consciousness, citta. Thinking, moments of consciousness, cittas. And each citta or moment of consciousness is accompanied by at least seven mental factors, which we call cetasikas. So virya is a mental factor. Understanding, panya, is a mental factor. Attachment is a mental factor. Ignorance is a mental factor. Aversion is a mental factor. So these are different mental factors that arise with different cittas, all, not self or anyone. So what is taken for self are just these cittas and cetasikas and the rupas that we've been talking about, the physical phenomena such as visible object or sound or hardness. So that's all there are in the world, just the arising and falling away of cittas, cetasikas, and rupas.
So like, if someone they are trying to achieve something, right? But he's actually, you know, like making his effort to trying to get, you know, like whatever this person wanted to get. But sometimes, you know, there is actually different conditions or basically, maybe I can say, you know, if it's not meant to be, and then there's no point, just, you know, push yourself, you know, to get to what you want to do. I mean, basically, just no point to try to achieve, you know, what you want to achieve.
Usually, in ignorance, there's the idea that I can do, I can achieve, and if I make this effort, I will get this result. But actually, no understanding of different conditions, like seeing now, who can make another seeing arise? Impossible, because it's the result of past karma. Or hearing, who can make hearing any different now? It's the result of past karma. Or suddenly one hears a loud noise and there's thinking with aversion. Who can stop it? Because it's arisen by conditions. So understanding more about different dharmas which have their own specific causes is the way to begin to appreciate actually no one who can do anything at all in truth.
They are there from moment to moment, no understanding, that's all. That's why Buddha taught us about what are there in each moment.
So we can say conventionally, I can choose to go left or right. Okay, fine, conventionally. But in reality, no eye that can go any way. Just moments of thinking which condition different speech and action, that's all.
And each of those moments of thinking is
conditioned too.
Can this be the regular experience? The seeing, the hearing, but it's not I or anyone. It's the developed panya which begins to understand. And no one knows who has such and such understanding, only oneself, who is so very honest about what is heard with it, but how much there is understanding of that. For example, that which is seen, no matter how many times it's heard, it depends on the development of right understanding. After it has developed, even long, long time, there is no hearing about it. But as soon as there is hearing, right understanding can be there. Is there someone in this room? No. Realities. Different realities.
Quite a bit of talk about worldly conditions when we're in Vietnam. These are gain, loss, praise, blame, fame, obscurity, happiness, pain. And usually because we think in terms of people and situations, we're very susceptible to these worldly conditions. That's why they're called worldly conditions. Can we say that with more understanding of realities, more understanding, I wouldn't say necessarily less susceptibility, but more understanding of what is what, and that what gain really is and what loss really is, just moments of results of karma and moments of kusala and akusala.
There is the understanding that each moment is conditioned, no matter what, at all. Fame or loss.
Yeah. A little bit like you said before. Whatever comes, comes. Yeah, when it's conditioned. So no point in stressing or worrying or being.
But in terms of karma, what is praise? What is blame?
It's heard, it's seen, it's touched, it's smelled, it's thought.
How does one smell praise?
Oh, good smells. So very expensive. I can have that. Praise because gain and praise because you, it's you who can have that. The queen and the king. The rich, see? Who is rich? See? Is the eye rich? Is the ear rich? So who is seeing rich?
So are we referring to results of through the senses, or are we talking about the thinking which follows, or
if
both?
If there is no realities at all, can there be fame,
so
praise?
What reality is fame?
Citta, cetasika, rupa, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking.
Results and thinking. Because it's a situation, so it's a long story about different results, like the pleasant odour and thinking about, you know, how one's been presented with this because one's important. And so it's actually the thinking about what is being experienced.
When we talk about fame, what kind of fame? Of what? Wholesomeness or unwholesomeness?
Can be anything, anything at all.
Yeah.
Can be fame of having so much wholesomeness in life, or
bad fame. Can we say that? and wholesome.
Great adulation by screaming teenage girls. It's on.
So, liking something, taste of something, but not associating with, not having the thought that one has got it or gained something, is not gain, is it?
You think that you gain, but actually it's only a moment of experiencing reality, which arises and falls away. So, can you gain that?
So gain is only when one associates with gain or loss. That some bad, some good experience, I've got it.
I think that when you think that you gain, it means you experience the pleasant objects.
Like when you have a delicious meal and then
many, many moments, but you think you've gained, you've had a delicious meal. And when you have a bad meal, it seems like a loss. So it's a way of thinking that it is a gain.
Yeah, but not always you think that you just had, you just enjoyed the meal without thinking that.
Happiness, pain.
But it's also nebulous things like money in the bank. Because that's why it's worldly conditions,
right. So
not realities. Worldly.
Worldly. So when does it qualify as worldly condition and when it's not?
That's what do you mean, when is it worldly?
Because not all experiences would qualify as gain, for example. Not all moments of lopa and thinking about the object will qualify as...
You're just talking about conceptual things. That's why it's worldly.
So can we say, excuse me, can we say that when there is the experience in pleasant object, it's gain?
Anytime there's experience of pleasant object is gain.
And it also conditioned the concept of gain too.
Every time?
Because
whenever
you gain.
That idea.
Just enjoying chocolate is gain?
A lot. In full of chocolate in your house.
But not always. Sometimes it's just passing.
Then it's
in
loss.
Passing.
Can even be like now, idea of gaining
Dharma discussion.
Can be, but also can be, no, not.
Can be understanding of realities, but
or
usually...
Just lopa.
Yeah, but it's still an idea when there's lopa and there's thinking about it, that there is an idea of gain.
What about experiences, pleasant object without lopa? Is it possible? Even it's gain, but there's no attachment to that. Like Arahata, see, Buddha himself.
So is that one of the worldly conditions?
Fame, the most famous being
so
in the universe.
So that's one of the worldly conditions?
Certainly.
But not susceptible to worldly conditions, so not influenced.
But it is a worldly condition. It means it is an instance of praise and fame. Although
for the ignorant, it's
susceptible to those as or thinking of those as worldly conditions. But for those who are wise, just moments of vipaka, moments of just different
so
conditioned realities.
But what about moment of experiences and pleasant object? Is that the idea that I gain? When it's unpleasant object, can you say I gain?
But not necessarily the idea of I lost.
When it's unpleasant object happen, for example, you have many things and you lose what you like. Unpleasant object experienced.
But not all the time when someone has to think that I've lost it, I've lost.
Any moment when one experiences pleasant object, everyone say he gains.
So when
no matter little or much.
So when an arahat experience unpleasant object, is it loss?
Who was Sivali? Very famous monk, disciple. Wherever he went, lots of things presented to him. That's why Buddha said, whether Sivali went or not, If he went, be sure, no trouble. But he's not attached to whatever experience. But can we say that it's not gain when it's the pleasant objects offering?
So there is gain.
When moment of experiencing
pleasant
object.
Wouldn't that be the idea of gain only if lopa arises?
Not necessary to
not
be
necessary.
Lopa. Gain is to get or experience pleasant objects.
Experiencing pleasant objects is considered a gain.
Moments of kusala, kusala vipaka, moments of experiencing pleasant visible objects, pleasant sounds. But for the wise, no idea of I have gained this because it's just conditioned dhamma.
That's true, but there's no attachment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if there's no attachment, then it can't be a gain, right?
Certainly. Moment, the experiencing pleasant object is gain. When it's unpleasant, can we say I gain? No. When one is famous, but one is not attached to that at all, see?
It's still fame.
Again, but no attachment.
Last time we were here, we were discussing briefly another meaning of rupa as being that which is anything which is the object of attachment, such as piya rupa, that which is dear, piya rupa. I think it's sada rupa or sata rupa.
Yeah.
Can you say
includes everything?
Anything,
is, not only rupa.
Oh, not anything that is dear. Not
whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And any reason why rupa is used in this context?
It depends on what is used. For example, usually we like rupa.
Mm-hmm.
What we take is concrete, like rupa.
Right. Okay. And usually it's the visible object that's. That's more attachment to than the seeing what is heard, what is okay. So rupa is what there's greatest attachment to. So
that whatever is object of attachment is rupa.
Yes,
but it can be
anything. Yeah. So piya rupa, that which is the object, that which is held dear, and sada rupa. Is it sata as in being or
no,
sada?
No, it's synonymous of piya.
Piya, okay, same. Okay. Just that which is dear, anything that's dear.
Pleasant and dear.
Pleasant and dear. Roxanne, anything else you would like to bring up as it's before we finish?
Do you know where is the whisper object?
Where is visible object? Like visible object that's seen now, where is it?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
It is seen. So where is it?
Nowhere.
Being here, listening to the top. Right. Being here, listening to the top. Right.
Visible object.
Oh, visible object. Now, visible object is seen, but where is it? Where is the visible object?
So, it arises and vipaka, so where? You mean with
where?
Once?
Somewhere? Oh, here or there? Or what? Or where? Can we say wherever there is the four primary rupas, hardness, softness, whisper object is there together, but it's not hardness, it's the softness. It's another reality arising with that together at the same moment, falling away together. So there are at least in a particle, very small, the smallest unit, 8 rupa together, but the 4 is for primary condition, the other 4 to arise with it.
Okay, this is quite difficult. It's appearing here, is here and now, but that visible object, in order for it to arise and be seen, it cannot just arise on its own in the universe. It has to have the support of other rupas. And actually, each rupa arises in a group of at least 8 rupas. So in order for the visible object to arise and be seen now, it has to have arisen together with the other primary rupas, which are earth, air, fire or temperature and water. Those 4 rupas have to arise. And in addition, there has to be taste, nutriment, and, well, visible object itself arises, and odor. So all these rupas arise together, but so it's supported by the other rupas, but only the visible object is seen. Mm-hmm. But why is one visible object different from another? Why is there thinking about yellow and not white? Because the visible object is influenced or conditioned by the hardness and the temperature and all the other rupas that arise together with it and condition it to be that way. And that is why there is impression of different colors, different objects of seeing. But it's a subtle point. But it's just to show how the visible object is conditioned in many ways, and each one is different depending on other supporting rupas, other conditions.
Okay. I still don't understand where the original question.
Can you see?
No. Hardness.
Open your arms. You see that you cannot touch.
No.
But this, when you close your eyes, what appears is only hardness. But as soon as you open your eyes, hardness is not experienced, but that which is there with it is seen. So different realities. In order to understand that not any reality can be taken for self or anything permanent or I or something, because it's conditioned, arising and falling away in split seconds and succeeds from moment to moment, so it appears as it's still here.
So the best answer is where the 4 primary rupas are.
Right. It cannot arise alone without the 4 primary rupas. Even if seen all day, it's not known. Until Buddha taught about it.
You might have been guessing for a long time before you got to the answer.
Because the word, you know, where is distracting. It makes, it's like a, it's not
like
a place. It's not
more
what
like
you,
how or how does it arise.
Right.
Or, Yeah. Why does it arise?
I knew it couldn't be a physical place, but I understand better.
Because what we mean normally by where is just an idea.
Ajahn, just one question. When we were in Vietnam, we were talking about how the process of consciousness before death, the kusala or akusala conditions, rebirth. And you were talking about another expression, for example, when listening to the Dharma shortly before death, it's not the last process, but it can also condition, it accumulates, the understanding can accumulate to condition happy rebirth. And did you say it was sandhaka karma or something like that? You mentioned an expression. Marana.
Marana is close to
sana.
Moment of death.
Marana
sanaka.
Sanaka.
In time. Marana sanaka.
Sanaka.
Short moments before death. It can be minutes or hours or days. Mm-hmm.
So it just means moments before death or close to death.
Close to death.
Mm. And was
the not the last.
Not
process.
Before, but because, for example, like we know now, any understanding accumulates. And by mentioning this Morana Sanaka karma shortly beforehand, just like now
it
or any time.
Now talking about Dharma and then death comes.
Yeah,
we don't know. We don't know the last process, but we can understand moments before. Close to. That's why when one closes one's eyes, no one here, nothing here at all. But as soon as open one's eyes, so it's there, everything, because of the reality which can be seen with the Mahabhudarupa there. If there is no Mahabhudarupa, nothing is seen like this, see? So where is the visible object?
The Mahabhuta rupas refer to the four primary rupas, the earth, air, fire and water, manifesting as hardness, temperature, motion and cohesion. So those are the four primary rupas, and all other rupas are derived from them or conditioned by them. So visible object cannot arise. Visible object cannot arise without the support of those primary rupas.
The same to where's the sound? Where's the sound?
Primary rupas.
Yeah, even it's not heard, but it's there. Without it, there cannot be sound. And smell?
Same
again. Taste?
It's a bit like saying, where is so-and-so?
So with his family, so where is visible object? With the family of the other primary rupas. So you could think of where like that.
So we can see where, when it's not there, we cannot experience.
We do a little kind of.
Who knows that everything is gone? Nothing is left.
So the other answer to where visible object is that it's nowhere, it's gone.
Gone.
That one is gone.
All gone.